Good morning, everybody. So this agenda paper 13 discusses an issue related to the scope, recognition, presentation, and measurement relating to a service concession arrangement in which the infrastructure is leased. In this submission, there were many specific fact patterns relating to the concession arrangement, and there were mainly three questions relating to such an arrangement. And because it is not a general practice of the committee to provide case-by-case guidance based on specific fact patterns, we analyze the issue by giving considerations to what entities would have to consider in determining the outcome of each question in the submission. So the first question relates to the scope of the arrangement, whether the arrangement with a particular fact patterns would fall within the scope of District 12. We noted that an assessment of whether a particular arrangement falls within the scope of District 12 requires judgment, and therefore entities should consider all the relevant facts and circumstances in making such an assessment. In particular, we think that such an assessment should focus on whether the concession arrangement meets the control conditions in paragraph 5 and the infrastructure meets one of the conditions in paragraph 7. We also noted that the key question with respect to the scope issue in the submission is whether an arrangement in which there is no construction or upgrade services can fall within the scope of IFRIC 12. And we are of the view that as long as the scope requirements in paragraph 5 and 7 are met, an arrangement can fall within the scope of IFRIC 12. And we think that this is consistent with one of the conditions in paragraph 7, which is paragraph 7b, which deals with the infrastructure to which the grantor gives the operator access. The second question, the second issue relates to whether the operator should recognize liabilities arising from the arrangement with the corresponding assets at the beginning of the arrangement. Our analysis of this issue did not include those arrangements in which the operator gives payments to the grantor, because we thought such analysis overlaps the other IFRIC 12 issue, that is the one you discussed yesterday. But if the lease payments are to a third party, we think that entities first have to consider whether there are any parts of the service concession arrangements that are exactory or not. And if entities conclude that the arrangement is not exactory, they should recognize a liability with the corresponding asset at the commencement of the arrangement. And with respect to the type of the asset to be recognized, entities should consider whether they have a contractual right to receive cash or intangible asset or a combination of both by assessing, among other things, who bears the demand risk. And lastly, the third issue relates to whether the operator acts as an agent with respect to the lease arrangement, and if so, whether it affects the presentation and measurement of the assets and liabilities. We are of the view that irrespective of whether the operator is an agent or not, with respect to the lease arrangement, the operator would have to recognize those assets and liabilities on a gross basis. This is because it is the operator who has a contractual right to receive cash or intangible asset and has an obligation to make future payments to the third-party leasing company. And we think that diversity is in practice limited, and the diversity may be arising from the application of effectual requirements to a different facts and circumstances, not necessarily applying the requirements to the same facts and circumstances. And furthermore, we consider that there is sufficient guidance in existing standards, so we recommend that the Interpretations Committee should not take this issue onto its agenda. So the question is, do you agree with staff analysis and recommendation that you shouldn't take this issue onto its agenda? And if you do you have any comments on the wording of the tentative agenda decision? Thank you.
Harden?
Yeah, based on the outreach, I guess we could see that this is
an important topic in some jurisdictions. However, I guess it is a very good analysis of the existing standards, and the outcome is appropriate. So I personally do not believe that we need to go further with any interpretation or additional work. I also see that the tentative wording is quite long. However, I guess it is necessary to have the whole setup in one wording. What I probably would add is something. I mean, in paragraph 59 in the paper, we mentioned that IRS 17 is not applicable for leasing arrangements in connection with service concession arrangements. So if the present value of lease payments has to be recognized in the balance sheet or not, depends on the fact if the lease arrangement is executory or not. So also the differentiation between finance and operate lease then is not necessary. And I guess that would be probably another important point to make it clearer for applicants how to apply IFRS in this regard. I've only one additional very, very minor wording issue in the tentative agenda decision. There's an one point reference done to transport services. I would be more general. Only in one point we have transport services, and all the other aspects we are more general, so probably we could exchange this word.
Okay, point taken. Carl?
Thanks. I agree, fully agree with staff's analysis. Just one small concern in page 29 of the paper, in the agenda decision. Third paragraph, in the middle, entities should exercise judgment to determine whether I would change to should refer to contractual terms. I think would be more appropriate. Exercise judgment seems to be so much wide open. We should focus in contractual terms, especially in this sector.
You're on page 29.
Third paragraph.
It's just here.
Yeah, we're kind of opposed to judgment this meeting. So I would agree with that.
Refer to contractual terms.
Reinhardt.
My biggest concern with respect to the staff analysis is really the scope, and the staff has concluded that you don't need construction or upgrade services of the infrastructure to be in the scope of IFRIC 12, and that outsourcing arrangements could be in IFRIC 12. My understanding is that practice is focused very much on the requirements of paragraph 5, as the staff have, as well as information note 2 to IFRIC 12, which clearly indicates that you need rehabilitate, operate, transfer, or build, operate, transfer to be within the scope of IFRIC 12, whereas service or maintenance contracts are outside of the scope of IFRIC 12. And so that's my biggest concern, is that I think this would be a significant expansion of the scope of IFRIC 12, at least the way I understand it is interpreted in practice. And as I say, it's because of the guidance and information note 2 to IFRIC 12. In terms of the other issues, I agree with the staff analysis. I think like Martin said, rather than focusing on whether the contract arrangement is an executory arrangement between the grantor and the operators, maybe focus on who has control of the asset in order to identify whether a lease is inherent in the arrangement. And then, I guess, as others have said, in terms of the length of the agenda decision, it may be possible to summarize it down to what are the key principles, and things like scope the lease criteria in order to meet a lease. I think there may be a way to shorten it down from 5 pages to something a little bit less.
Are you volunteering? He volunteered once already, so he can't volunteer you twice. Andrew?
Thanks. Yeah. I think it's a very good analysis, and I agree with most, but not quite all of it. Slightly in contrast to Reinhardt, I actually found I got a bit lost in the agenda decision, given that we've got, it's not quite clear, first of all, whether we're in the intangible asset or financial asset model, and I think that changes some of the analysis. Then we've got case one and case two, and in some places I wasn't quite sure which fact pattern we're actually referring to in some of the comments. So I think we need a way of making sure that we're kind of navigating clearly through all of this. Whether that results in more or less than five pages, time will tell. On the scope question, I mean, personally, I agree that you don't need construction or upgrade services to be in scope. But I think there is diverse practice out there on that question. And I think IFRIC 12 itself does give some mixed messages. I mean, Reinhardt referred to information note 2. There are other references like paragraph 12 of IFRIC 12, which I think at least can be read to suggest that in whatever the technical scope is, the guidance in IFRIC 12 is only relevant if there are construction or upgrade services. So I think I agree with the staff, and I think we can probably clarify that through a tentative agenda decision, but I wouldn't object to an amendment to clarify the point in IFRIC 12 itself. If we go down the agenda decision route on that point, I think it would be helpful to say why it matters whether we're in IFRIC 12 or not if there are no construction or upgrade services. But it's certainly the case that almost all the guidance in that interpretation is on how to account for the construction or upgrade piece, and we refer into IFRS 15 for most of the rest of it. So I think it makes a difference in terms of if you apply IFRIC 12, you don't apply the leasing literature, and although you get a bit circular on whether you recognise the infrastructure or not, if there are infrastructure assets and you're in the scope of IFRIC 12, however you came by those assets, you don't recognise them. So I think it might be just useful to constituents to make those points more explicitly. On the other points, I have similar concerns to others who've spoken about this executory versus non-executory analysis. Yeah, we seem to be almost in saying it's not executory because the lessor has delivered a right of use. Can't deliver the right of use to the grantor if we're in IFRIC 12. To say that's not executory is sort of borrowing a bit from IFRS 16 as a concept, I'd suggest. Right now, I think we'd say that even though we're outside the scope of IS 17, we still think of it as an operating lease and an executory contract because the underlying asset, rather than the right of use, has not been transferred. Or at least that's an argument. So I think we need a slightly different way of coming, whether there's a liability or not. I've sent some more detailed comments in advance. The area I thought perhaps the analysis was a bit light was on the principal agent piece of this. There isn't actually a lot of guidance in IFRS outside of the revenue literature on assessing whether you're a principal or an agent. If we were to analogise to the revenue guidance, we'd look at whether or not I think the operator obtains control of the right of use, and if it doesn't obtain control, it's just arranging for control to be transferred to the grantor. That will certainly be a strong suggestion it's actually an agent, I think. Of course, there's an exposure draft out there which is going to change the guidance in IFRS 15, but I wasn't quite sure really how the staff were coming at that piece of the literature. So whilst I agree that the operator seems to have some risk and it has to pay the lessor whether or not it's receiving payments from its customer, I wasn't quite sure that was enough to be so decisive about whether it's principal or agent.
John?
I agree with the staff analysis on scope. I don't think it's necessary to have construction or upgrade services to be in the scope of IFRIC 12. So I think that conclusion, I think, is correct. I was confused by the analysis about the recognition and then executory, non-executory, because we seem to be drawing a distinction between case one, where the infrastructure is owned by the grantor or an entity related to the grantor, and one where the grantor procures the infrastructure through some sort form of right of use. Now, I suppose there is a question as to whether if that right of use is a is a finance lease or an operating lease, does that make a difference as to whether to the service concession accounting? But this notion of executory, non-executory, I think, is not how I would approach the analysis. I'd approach the analysis from looking at whether the grantor has obtained the right of use. It seems to me clear that the operator doesn't have the right of use because we're in service concession arrangements, so they don't control either the physical infrastructure or the right to use that infrastructure. It's the grantor that controls that. We've already determined that because of the scope of IFRIC 12. But then I would think that the analysis needs to be whether the, you know, if that is that right of use a recognized lease asset from the grantor's perspective or an operating lease. And if it's a finance lease, I would say that it's no different than if the grantor owned the infrastructure in IAS 16. If it's an operating lease, we might take the view that that does make a difference to the recognition of it in the service concession arrangement. But the discussion in there about executory and non-executory, I was confused by what we were actually trying to say there. And from whose perspective are we talking about executory? Because in a service concession arrangement, the whole thing is treated as being executed up front. They are entering into the arrangement it's not an executory contract over 30 years. It's actually except for the operation services part of it, but the rest of it, the asset part of it is actually executed up front. So I didn't think the analysis there was very clear.
Bob?
Yeah, I also was a bit confused by the executory, non-executory. With regards to the staff analysis and being in scope of IFRIC 12, I absolutely agree case one, I think, is in IFRIC 12. And I do agree you don't need construction or upgrade services to be in the scope of IFRIC 12. But on case two, I guess I get a little twisted around because if I understand correctly, the form of the transaction is the operator is leasing the infrastructure from a third party and then in effect subleasing it to the grantor. And I'm struggling with, well, why are we saying then that it's the grantor's asset? And maybe I don't understand the transaction enough, but if I understand what we're saying is it's the grantor's asset because they're guaranteeing the lease, but the operator is already obligated, but we say the operator is obligated for the lease. So I guess I need a little more on why case two is in the scope of IFRIC 12.
Tony?
So on scope, I agree completely with the staff analysis. I think it is in scope. I don't think there is a need for construction or upgrade services to be in scope of IFRIC 12. I don't think there's anything in the interpretation, to my mind, that suggests that. I think to the point that Bob just made, I think if this is the infrastructure that is being used to deliver the concession, then the principle in IS 12 is that the grantor controls that, even though the operator may, in this fact pattern, be obligated. So I don't think case one, case two makes a difference. I agree with where the staff's got to. I do share the concerns of others about the way the executory, non-executory argument is made, because I think the once you're in scope, then it's the grantor that controls the infrastructure, and that's just the underlying principle of IFRIC 12. So if there is a lease, it's not a lease to the operator, as I think John said, it's a lease to the grantor. And then if the grantor is making that asset available, that's not going to be a lease because IFRIC 12 says it isn't a lease. It's part of the service concession. And then I got a little bit lost in the analysis because I think Martin said there is something helpful in the staff paper that says you don't apply IAS 17 in the operator's accounting, and I think it might be helpful to specify that. To my mind, I think the paper then doesn't quite... It doesn't quite finish the analysis around presentation and measurement. It says you have to think about whether you're principal agent and then goes on to say, noted that as long as the operator has a contractual obligation, it should recognise the asset and liability gross. And there just seemed to me to be a step in that part of the analysis missing. So if the operator is acting as an agent, I don't think that would necessarily say you don't have an asset and a liability if the grantor, the operator, is on the hook to make payments to the leasing company if the grantor should default. And so I just thought that step in the analysis ought to be expanded a little bit to try and explain how the link sort of works all the way through. I also wondered what we were telling people in, this is at the bottom of page 29, little b, with respect to case one, the interpretations committee noted that the committee had been considering the accounting of payments made to the operator. Well, in fact, I think we just decided not to. So we're sort of referencing people off to something that yesterday we decided not to do.
Okay, Michael, what's next for this?
Okay. There seems to be general agreement on the first piece, which is the scope, mm-hmm. Both in terms of analysis and the conclusions reached in the tentative agenda decision. I think where there's some questions being raised is on the analysis, particularly on the second issue, and perhaps to some extent on the third. Not necessarily that the outcome conclusions have got the wrong place, but that there should be a bit more flesh on the bones there with those. So I would suggest, why don't we bring back some further analysis to the next meeting to just confirm that where we've got to is something that everyone is happy with?
Well, I took away the sense that the executory, non-executory analysis didn't buy us much.
Yeah.
And so we can probably drop that. And if possible, to make the agenda decision more focused on the underlying principles, because it does go along a long way. Bonnie, did you have anything to add on this one?
No, my comments were in line with what the others have already talked about.
Last question,
right? Sure.
Would it make the idea is to bring back a revised tentative agenda decision next time. Could it make sense for us to have a look at it ahead of time and offer comments rather than coming back around the table?
Of course.
Thinking about trying to expedite the process and not having another sort of meeting where we've got comments and you guys haven't had a chance to think about it.
No, I think that's an excellent suggestion. Okay, that's what we'll do. Just for my edification, was there anyone who disagreed with the scope conclusion? Reinhardt. Okay. I thought there was. I just couldn't. All right. That's where we are.